Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Kate Loving-Schenk, and Joan Adams and I host this show. Joan is away tonight on an appointment that she has with her grandchildren. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Tonight's Moon, Moo, and You is dedicated to Eric Dworkin, a gay man who recently committed suicide. My friend Joel Wexler will be on the show this evening to discuss the high rate of major depression and suicide in the American gay population. One of the ramifications of this statistic is bullying and, more recently, cyberbullying, most notably on Facebook and MySpace. Joel was hospitalized for major depression for 15 years, and many of his friends lost track of him. One day he resurfaced, which was one of the happiest days of my life. Eric Dworkin was one of the few who kept in close touch with Joel during those dark nights of the soul, the existential crisis, and the journey of Job himself. Joining me now is Joel Wexler. Good evening, Joel.
Good evening, Kate. How are you?
I am wonderful.
Well,
I'm always very happy to hear your voice.
Yes. Well, thank you for dedicating it to Eric. He was a close friend of mine, and he struggled, and it really had not much to do with his gayness so much as his mental illness, but I really appreciate you dedicating this show to him, because it was a suicide, and we are going to be talking about suicides of younger people who, as you said, get bullied and die and commit suicide, many of them, because of what we have today with webcams and so forth.
Yes, I was very happy to read the article in the New York Times on Sunday, the one you pointed out to me. And that was fascinating. I think that the way kids can just single people out and create false Facebook accounts, and it's unbelievable that parents do need to monitor their children on these social networking sites.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, when I was growing up, which was back in the 50s and early 60s, I was bullied for being Jewish, because we lived
yes.
in a mostly non-Jewish neighborhood for a while. But it was nothing like today. I mean, you know, the bullying stopped when other Jewish families moved up. It was nothing like today. There was no Twitter, Facebook, iPod, iPhone, whatever. Cyberbullying, there was not even such a term as cyber space.
No, you're right. And you also grew up a little bit in the 40s.
I was born in 1939, so.
Yeah. the 1940s was even quieter than the 1950s, if that's possible. And
yes,
now everything is very loud and very, all this information and all of this distraction, and people cannot concentrate.
Right.
And a lot of it does have to do with the technology. And we need to learn to give it its place, but not
yes.
allow it to take over our lives.
Yes, I used to teach English literature, as you know, quote from Shakespeare's The Tempest, where Miranda talks to her father Prospero and says, "Oh, brave new world, what have we come to?" Something like that. And
yeah.
That quote, I think, is very applicable for today. We have technology. We cannot stop it, obviously. But it is a brave new world. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, you know, I wonder. The way I, my experience with technology is that I'm not aware of the dark side. Because I've connected with people from all over the world who are into a new vision of love and peace,
yeah.
and that's who I commune with online. And this other, so I was just going to say, this other side of it is destructive. It's hateful, and it's, I would even go as far as to say, and I don't mean this in a Christian way, but it's just evil. And evil just means, or it's sin, a sin, the word sin just means that you've missed the mark. It's an archery term. So,
oh, yeah.
And the mark is love, and you've missed
yeah.
the mark.
I totally agree. A good friend of mine, actually a good friend of Eric's too, said that with every advance in technology to the positive side, like when the automobile was invented, that gave us more mobility. We could travel quicker and easier. But it also brought with it death because people died in car accidents. It brought with it pollution. So
mm-hmm.
I totally agree with you, Kate, that every advance in technology has this positive side to it. And we can't stop it. It has to, it will happen. But it has this negative side to it that is often dangerous and, like you say, evil. And in the case of these kids who were bullied, suicide. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you have a statistic on that, Joel? I mean, we were talking, you and I were talking about the high rate of people jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, that of all the bridges perhaps in the world, well, at least
yeah.
in this country,
yeah.
more people jump off of that bridge.
Yeah, psychiatrist friend of mine, she told me, because she knows about things like this, that yeah, of all the bridges in the world, actually, the
mm-hmm.
one in San Francisco, the Golden Gate Bridge at number one, I had a friend who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. As you know, not having to do with bullying, but it was back in the late 80s, and he had AIDS, and he jumped off the bridge. So,
I'm thinking that the high rate of suicide off that bridge could easily be attributed to that a lot of people were gay who did it. San Francisco has
yeah.
such a high rate of gay people who live there, that it would
right.
possibly stand to reason that a lot, I'd love to know the statistics there, but, and I'm sure they exist somewhere, but yeah,
yeah.
I think that we need to be mindful of our speech and how we speak to people, because it hateful speech has a very penetrating effect on people,
yes.
and as does loving speech,
yes,
and
yes.
And this cyberbullying and then bullying in general is nothing but very hateful and misunderstood. Yeah,
there's an article that I cut out of the New Jersey Star Ledger a few days after Tyler Clemente jumped off the bridge. Can I read part of it?
Please.
It's an editorial. It's titled "An Unnatural Death and the Reason for New Resolve Against Bigotry." Let me see if I can see this thing here. You know, I'm an old man. And it would bring some comfort today to focus on the life of Tyler Clemente as if this death were a natural one. By all accounts, he was a fine young man, a hard worker, and a talented violinist. The kind of son that could make a parent proud. But this was not a natural death. it was something much worse. And this is not a day to comfort ourselves. It is a day to fight our demons. Imagine the despair that this young Rutgers student felt as he leapt into the darkness from the George Washington Bridge, and you can get a sense of what we are up against. Bigotry against gays can make this world a cold and hostile place to a young man who is still establishing his identity. Mm-hmm. We don't know with certainty what drove Clemente off that bridge, but we do know he was a gay man who was treated like a circus animal, his sexual life treated like a curiosity. The students accused of spying on him and exposing him will have to live with themselves. I mean, they've ruined not only his life, Tyler's life, the parents' life, but their own lives. Anyway, let's see.
Can you give us a little background on him?
On Tyler?
Clemente.
Yes, I went to a rally in his hometown because I lived near a very wealthy hometown of Summit, New Jersey. He grew up in Summit, New Jersey. He was a very good student. He had two younger brothers. He was the middle brother, three brothers. Grew up in the suburbs of New Jersey. He was an accomplished violinist at the Garden State Equality Rally after his death in Summit. One of his friends played an original violin concerto dedicated to Tyler. Another friend, a young woman, a playwright at NYU, she's writing a play about Tyler. Parents of gay kids were there. They spoke out. That was the most moving thing. They said, it could have been my son. It could have been my daughter. Some kids who knew Tyler, who were gay, they spoke out. They felt so bad about losing Tyler. It was a very moving experience. I got up at the end, and I read something. Can I read it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Yeah, I read some quotes, and because it was a whole big event, I read a quote by, which I could share with your audience and mail to you. This one is by Mahatma Gandhi. If we have no charity and no tolerance, we shall never settle our differences. Another one is by Mother Teresa. The biggest disease today is not leprosy or tuberculosis, but rather the feeling of being unwanted, uncared for, and deserted by everybody. The greatest evil is the lack of love and charity, the terrible indifference towards one's neighbor. Another one by Mother Teresa. Let us be sincere in our dealings with each other and have the courage to accept each other as we are. And then Bayard Rustin, who worked with Martin Luther King, a black man who was gay, during the 60s. Bigotry's birthplace is the sinister back room of the mind, where plots and schemes are hatched for the persecution and oppression of other human beings. Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You heard those quotes? Yeah, well, I got up and read those quotes, and Tyler's parents weren't. Are you there, Kate?
Yes, please go ahead.
Oh, good. Yeah, Tyler's parents weren't there, of course, but a whole big crowd was there, and they thanked me for reading what I read. Because I was outraged by this whole event. This kid never had a chance to come out naturally. I called the president of Rutgers, and I told him this, that at least before cyberbullying and everything, you know, people could come out at their own rate. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what I did, because I grew up in a different time, and I wrote a poem about that. Should I read that?
Yeah, please.
I'll read part of it, because I was allowed to. What outraged me the most was that I was allowed to go through my process. Tyler was forced to, he wasn't given a chance to go through his process, if you know what I mean. Let's see if I
can
find. 1 minute.
I feel terrible for him.
But Tyler, I feel Could you imagine that kid? The cold water. And could you imagine what his parents are going through and his family? To lose a child, the worst thing possible, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, just tragic. And my, and then I'll talk more about this. My main thing is that we must never forget. And it's got to stop, you know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
Okay, I'll read you what I wrote a little bit. And I also want to say that I think creativity helps people. And Tyler was a violinist. If he had had a chance to develop as a violinist, as a gay man, creativity would have helped him. I really believe in that. Anyway, so I wrote this. Coming out as a gay male in America, coming out as somebody different, somebody who didn't follow the norm, whatever that is, coming out as a need to be authentic, truthful about who I am, coming out as a process, both physically, mentally, and spiritually, coming out as growth. It's all about time to declare myself. Coming out slowly, I have, or all at once, some do. Tyler didn't have a chance. Actually, it has been a process that began when I was very young, perhaps 5 years old. Being able to finally be able to say, like, I'm on the drag queen in Lacage Flow, the Broadway show, you know Lacage?
Well,
at the end of Act One, the drag queen lifts off his wig and starts singing, I am who I am. And he dumps it out, and he says, I don't give a damn. And he walks into the audience and out into the booth. And he slams the door, and that's the end of Act One. And the audience goes wild. It's playing on Broadway now. But Amon had a chance to say who he was. This kid, Tyler, never had a chance. Am I getting a little angry?
No, I think it's anger is a way of, another form of creativity, right?
Yes, it is. No, it does. It helps.
It helps people to articulate how they really feel.
Yes. No, I agree. So where are we? There was not only Tyler, People magazine, I don't have it in front of me, but there was an issue, you could probably find it, back in a couple of months ago. Well, what they had on People magazine, the Wall magazine, they had all these kids that had committed suicide on the front cover with a cover article about all the deaths of all the, not only Tyler, but other gay and lesbian kids, and even straight kids who are bullied, who have committed suicide. 13 mm-hmm. years old, 15 years old. Do you know the People magazine I'm referring to?
No, I haven't seen that one, no.
It was a cover
story. I will look it up.
Yeah, look it up. It was the cover story on People magazine, which I have somewhere, and I can't find it myself. But this is a national tragedy, and it keeps going on. Even as recently as this Sunday in the New York Times.
This Sunday?
Well, the articles you were referring to, you know, the digital bullying.
Yeah, I wrote something about that article. Should I read it to you?
Oh, sure.
I said that bullying in school is an age-old problem, and that is something that certainly is not new.
No.
Gay bashing, homophobic, cyberbullying is the next frontier of bullying. Parents will never be as techno-savvy as their children, no matter how hard they try to be. And kids will always be at least one step ahead of their parents in their attempts to punish. So one example of how a parent handled the situation was very brilliant. Mom took away the computer and the cell phone for months. Finally she bought her daughter a puppy, and she watched her daughter fall in love with the dog. One day the mother said, "What would you do if someone threw stones at this dog and tried to harm or kill him?" And then she saw her daughter wince, you know. And she said, this is how your schoolmate felt when you slandered her on Facebook. So the child finally heard and had a revelation, and only then did she change her behavior, you know, from she took responsibility for her actions only through the love of this dog.
Right.
And what else is new? We know that. We know that dogs will change the world.
Yes, we certainly do, Kate. We have a personal experience with that. Which we won't go into here, but...
The thing is about that article in the New York Times, though, don't you think, is that it really showed the callousness of the children who are doing this bullying. They are completely unmoved by their actions. They're not taking any responsibility for the way they are harming and possibly causing great sadness and maybe even suicide on the part of the people that they are bullying. And this is something that is a tragic situation in our culture today.
Absolutely. And I'm looking at the article right now, and I'm looking at the major, Glenn Woodson with his daughter Sierra, 12 years old, and she's sitting there like some kind of adult with an arrogant face, like, don't mess with me, buddy. 12 years old. You know, that picture is unbelievable. So
I don't understand. We need to. The situation I was reading about is about a child who was straight A's in school. She was a model child, and suddenly she started to really go haywire on Facebook.
Yes. Is this what article is this you're talking about?
That would be what I wrote about. Oh, actually, it would be a little segment of the article in the New York Times this weekend.
Oh, it was.
They were just, describing these children who were previously well-behaved kids, and suddenly they just become hateful and lash out at, especially people who are different from them.
Right. Exactly. And they're just kids, basically, Kate. Half of them, or a lot of them don't even know their own sexuality. You know
what
I mean? They're exploring their own sexuality. They're teenagers. I mean, I see these little kids, 10 years old and here in Glen Ridge, walking around with computers and iPhones and webcams and this and that and they're like bogged down with heaviness.
Mm-hmm.
They carry around
mm-hmm.
these backpacks, and they know more than their parents. They do. They know more than their parents. It's like they're born. As soon as they're born, they're on the cell phone. No, I'm just saying.
It's like an addiction. It's a terrible addiction where you can't put the cell phone away and sit and listen to people.
No, I have a skit with a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, and we do a skit where I play the client and he plays the therapist, and I come into his office and I say, Doc, you got to help me. I don't know what to do. My cell phone is taking over my life. I'm really in deep trouble. Can you please help me? I don't know what to do. I have to go to a hospital, maybe. The cell phone has destroyed my life. And my friend, in the skit, my friend says, now let's explore this a little bit. Does this have something to do with your childhood? And we go on and on and on until the end. And I say, well,
sounds
Doc,
funny. Well,
you've helped me
so
a lot.
It is funny.
I know. Doc, can I see you again? The therapist friend of mine said, well, that's going to cost you. I said, well, it's worth it. Anything to get rid of this cell phone blues. And then we end the session by saying, oh, Doc, could you give me a hug? And he says, that only happened in California. That's a little... You know what I'm talking about. So that's a little bit about cell phone blues.
Well, you know what? The iPhone and the BlackBerries are really not a cell phone. They are a handheld computer. Let's call it what they really are. They are not cell phones. They are not cell phones. They can act. One little part of it is a phone, just one small part. Most of it is it's just a computer, and it can access any part of the world at any time, and people can use it for good or they can use it for ill.
Right.
And I think that's really, really the point, isn't it?
The point is that
we can use almost anything for good or for ill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
we need to concentrate on the good.
Yeah, but again, back to these kids, if you're a little different, you're going to be bullied by these other kids because it's all peer pressure and all that type of thing. I mean, I wish I could find it, Kate. I'm going to look for it. But I wrote a poem after Tyler Clemente jumped off the bridge about him and these other kids that committed suicide. And I sent it to the president of Rutgers University, and he sent me back a letter thanking me for voicing my opinion, telling me, of course, he doesn't know what's going to happen to the kids that did the so-called prank, but he was very... I'll find that letter and I'll mail it to you. You know what I mean? I wrote a poem and a letter.
I would love to read it.
Yeah. I think your brother, a couple of people have read it. It's like Allen Ginsberg. It's really an angry poem. But maybe there is some hope at the end. I don't know.
There's always hope. And everybody has a larger, for instance, Tyler Clemente had an effect of opening people to the situation of sexuality, unexpressed sexuality, and like you, how you just described it is perfect. He didn't have a chance to go through his own process, and he probably didn't necessarily know. I'm not really clear on his story. Was he absolutely a gay man, or was he in the process of coming out, or what was that story?
I think the latest story is that he was experimenting, but he was going more towards men, and that's why he invited that man, who, by the way, nobody knows who that man is, or if they do, they're not talking. He invited that man to his room, and that's where his roommate, Ravi, whatever, and the roommate's friend discovered these so-called dudes. That's what he called. That's what Ravi called. These dudes making out, and Ravi webcammed it to the whole world. But was Tyler actually gay? Probably he was going in that direction, but he just never had that chance to really explore it. He was like cut off before his time. He probably see what I'm saying?
He was faced with a lot of guilt, shame, mostly shame.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, I don't even know exactly, Kate, because he might not have even, I don't think he was even out to his parents. And what a way to come out to your parents. To have the whole world know about it. He was only 19. He was only 19 years old. At 19, I didn't even know who the hell I was. I still don't know. No, I'm just kidding.
I know you are. Well, I think that getting down to homophobia in our society, it's a tremendous problem.
Yeah.
People seem to think it's okay to make gay jokes, or even in casual conversation. And I think that most people, when they do that, are not comfortable with their sexuality at all, or anybody else's. They're just not comfortable with the human condition. Let's put it that way.
I think that's very good. Although on the positive side, on TV now, there's a very popular show called The Modern Family. It's a comedy, and one of the couples is a gay couple that's raising a little Vietnamese girl, and it's hysterical. And won all kind of Emmy awards, but that would never have happened years ago when we had Leave It to Beaver and all those Howdy Doody. So there is some changing going on, but not quick enough. There's still the religious right. There's still those who oppose gay rights. Of course, there's the marriage equality business now that's heterosexuals are afraid that if they give rights to gays to get married or lesbians to get married, somehow it will ruin the institution of marriage. Don't get me started, Kate, on this puritanical country we live in.
Oh, I love it. I think we should discuss that.
You do? I mean, that has to do with marriage equality. There are some states that allow gays to get married, but there are a lot of states. Here in New Jersey, it was defeated. I try to work for it to get it passed. It might be with our Governor Christie now, and I don't want to get into politics about Christie. He voted against it. Corzine would have voted for it. Anyway, that's a whole. But, I mean, even that is a kind of advance. Years ago, in the 50s, there was never talk about gay marriage. Give me a break. You know what I mean?
That's right. So there are advances, but I want to say that the weekend, there are advances. The weekend before I knew that you were still amongst the living, this is very synchronistic. I had the opportunity to see the movie Milk with Sean Penn as playing Harvey Milk.
Brilliant.
Now, oh my God! And as I watched that film, I found myself getting deeper and deeper into this mindset of remembering living in San Francisco and how you and I spent a lot of time together and walking the dogs and just talking about everything, of course. And that was your, it seemed to be your period of time of coming out. And San Francisco at that time was absolutely wild, and the movie was depicting that, all the gay men moving into San Francisco and all of this excitement, and Harvey Milk was sort of at the height of his, he was just a brilliant man, and Sean Penn did a great job. That movie really had an effect on me, and I was thinking a lot about you, and just a day or two later, I found that you had called the Delaney and Jawa. I was just totally floored by that synchronicity. It wasn't like I just watched the movie and said ho hum that John Penn deserved the Academy Award and turned it off. I got really into it, and then you called, and I just thought it was all so interconnectedly amazing.
Yes, it was. I don't know why that happened that way, but it did. I was out of it for 15 years.
Oh, Joel, my gosh.
I mean,
well, how is your major depression, your depression, related? Is it related to your sexuality, do you think?
No, I don't really think so. I think what mine had to do with was that I was living in San Francisco as a drama therapist, trying to compete with other therapists who did more traditional kind of therapy. And Tim was dying of AIDS, and I was in the house alone in Berkeley, and I couldn't pay my bills. So it was really tangentially connected, but not really connected. It was much more a personal kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
No, you probably lost many, many friends to AIDS.
Oh, yes, and I did. Well, one of them, as I said, jumped off the bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge. Another one who lived in San Luis Obispo, California. I don't think you knew him, but he was a Vietnam veteran, and he was gay, but he had a son and a mother. We used to go visit them, Tim and I, and he died of AIDS. And then I had some clients who came and visited me, who came to my office and told me things like, Mr. Wexler, Joel, I've lost 100 people to AIDS, friends and acquaintances. And what was I supposed to do as a therapist? Go into, now tell me about your childhood? Forget it. I mean, I just, what was I supposed to do? That was after the milk situation. It was a horrible time in San Francisco. It was the gay disease. Ronald Reagan, our esteemed President Ronald Reagan, who lost his friend, Rock Hudson, wouldn't even use the word AIDS for 8 years.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
No, I know that our mother called President Reagan a fertilizer head.
what does that mean?
A shithead.
Well, let's not get into Reagan because that's a whole other story. But,
I know. It's really sad. I think it all does come down to sexuality and how we see her. And it really has, our sexuality really, in the end, doesn't have to do with sex. It has to do with our spiritual, our physical, and our emotional beings.
I agree.
And sexuality is, to me, reminds me of a way to express yourself, and that can be certainly through sex, but it can be, it's so much more than sex.
Oh, absolutely. No, I totally agree with you. Sex is just one component, like you say. I mean,
and that friend, and that guy who, in that play, who closes the first act by saying, I am who I am, that expresses a part of sexuality. I think that is such a great thing to express yourself, who you are, and it encompasses your whole being.
Yes.
So when you have homophobia in a society, it really is an expression of a people's inability to not even know who they are, to even accept anybody else, and we have a long way to go. But Hollywood has done a great job with things like Harvey Milk and these plays on Broadway and that show and this and that. I mean, always Hollywood is ahead of.
There's a brilliant film called The Kids Are All Right with Annette Bening and Julianne Moore. I don't know if your audience or you have seen it. I highly recommend it. It's about a lesbian couple, Annette Bening and Julianne Moore, both straight actresses. They're a lesbian couple, and they're raising kids. And the kids, it's like any other family in America. Actually,
right.
Annette Bening will probably be nominated for an Academy Award. She does a brilliant job.
Is this a recent film?
Yes, it's being touted as, she's being touted as one of the actresses who will be nominated. It's called The Kids Are All Right.
I want to see that.
It's a wonderful film. The woman who wrote it is a lesbian herself. And it's like these two, I mean, actresses and actors are amazing people. These two straight actresses, Annette Bening is married to Warren Beatty and has four kids herself. She plays a lesbian, and Julianne Moore plays a lesbian, and they kiss, and they do all kinds of things, but they're acting, and it's real. I mean, it's like, this is really it.
I just think Annette Bening is one of the greatest actresses that ever lived, really.
Oh, she is. And you know, I don't want to get into it, but she studied at San Francisco at the American Conservatory Theater. She was going to be a stage actress at first.
Yes.
Yes, but, oh, yeah, she's a brilliant actress, there's no doubt.
Well, I need to see that. I don't know if it will ever come to Lancaster, the conservative place that it is.
I was talking to some friends of mine. In Brazil, when they have the Mardi Gras, it goes on for a week. People are kissing gay people. People are parading around in the streets half naked. I mean, we live in a society of Puritans. We still live in a society where people are afraid of their sexuality. People are afraid to express their sexuality, except behind closed doors. Look at all these Republicans and Democrats that get caught messing around with young boys or young girls. I mean,
yeah.
we live...
Yeah.
we still live in a Puritan society, and we're not enlightened like France or Brazil or these European countries. People make fun of us because of our uptightness. You know
yeah,
that?
Puritanical is one, but I'd say it's pure repression. It's a repressed society. People are, very too quick to jump to conclusions and make assumptions.
Oh yeah.
But that colors every aspect of their lives and their thinking. It's not just because they are looking at one thing like that. They tend to look at all like that. So this is, this is where shows like this and writing like yours and blogging like mine and whatever everybody else is doing is helping to lift up the society and helps to enlighten it. We need to be hopeful about it. We need to even love the people who are completely, misled with the way that they are emotionally responding. First of all, to their own selves, their whole beings are not being expressed, and that's what we see when we see the deaths of these young men and young women. I know that the media tends to highlight lots of negative things, and we need to be aware of that. Behind every really gruesome story is a story that is inspiring. And the reason I know that is because we had a great woman on this show who writes an online newspaper called the Good News Gazette, because she and her husband were, or her husband-to-be were, and she's a young woman, probably in her early 30s or even younger. We're watching a lot of the news, and as we all tend to do from time to time. And they became completely despondent. Sorry, I don't know why I burst into laughter, but they became suddenly completely despondent about the state of the world. And the media tends to do this to us. And it's not their fault, because really they think that's what sells. They think that this is what people want. So what they did is they have this model where they go through the internet and they find good stories and they put it on this Good News Gazette. And interestingly enough, most of their stories that they find come from the Christian Science Monitor. And those stories are very unbiased, and they tend to look at all sides of the issues, the negative as well as the positive. But ultimately what this couple wants to do is start writing things themselves. They both have writing about the good things that are happening in the world and covering the stories themselves. The only problem is, of course, is that they have full-time jobs and they can't do it. But
of course.
The ultimate wringing out of your creativity is the full time job in America. But working for the major corporations and how they want you to become like sheep. But anyway, I just think that there is a lot that needs to be, it seems like in our retirement, and you would probably be interested in something like this where we start a movement where we bring out the positive, where we help to highlight people's self-expression, where we encourage creativity, we encourage people to embrace their whole selves. And I think really that's the message here, and it's tragic. And somebody like Tyler Clemente is the pioneer in getting something like this to happen. I think we have to become angry and incensed that something like this could happen. But on the other side, there's absolutely nothing that happens by mistake. And people like this man, to make his life worthwhile, he could actually be seen as a catalyst for this kind of change in our society.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to mention one other thing. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but in the 90s, there was this young man in Laramie, Wyoming, that was brutally murdered because he was gay. He was tied to a fence. They and they wrote it in this group called, I can't think of the name of the group right now, but they wrote a landmark play called The Laramie Project, where they went, I'll get you the full name of the play. It's been done all over the United States. They went to Laramie, Wyoming, and they did all these interviews with all the people that knew about the death of this Matthew Shepard, his name was.
That's right. Yes,
and,
I remember
him
well.
The play was done in New York. It won all kinds of awards. And it's all about how bigotry can ruin a person's life. I mean, this poor kid, Matthew, was completely destroyed years before Tyler Clemente. And I'd recommend a book by Matthew Shepard's mother called The Meaning of Matthew by Judy Shepard. And what Judy Shepard does is she took her son's death and she goes around to an organization called PFLAG, Parents of Gays and Lesbian Children, and she speaks all over the world. She even spoke to Mr. and Mrs. Tyler Clemente about the meaning of her son's death. She took her son's death and she turned it into something. Of course, it's a tragedy. She lost her son, but she turned it into a book, and she speaks all over the world. Have you heard of Judy Shepard?
No, I'm going to get that book, though.
Called The Meaning of Matthew by Judy
Shepard. Yeah, the thing
Shepard.
About Matthew Shepard and the Tyler Clemente case has been linked in the press. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. They were both hate crimes. And,
yeah, hate crimes, right.
And, of course, the kids that destroyed Matthew Shepard, I think they're spending their life in jail. The kids that destroyed Tyler Clemente, I don't know what's going to happen to them. It's not, because it's not exactly the same thing. I mean, with Matthew Shepard, they brutally beat him to death and murdered him and put him, like, I mean, I can't imagine what they did to that poor little kid. He was a freshman. And at the end of The Meaning of Matthew by Judy Shepard, it's very moving. She quotes what her husband, Dennis, Matthew's father, says, that Matthew was not our gay son. He was our son who happened to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was so moving. I mean...
And did Judy Shepard discuss in this book her own process in coming to accept her son, or did she ever have any problems? Maybe she had no problems accepting him at all.
Well, let me see. I haven't read the book. Actually, no, they accepted him. A very loving family. He had a younger brother. He has a younger brother. Totally accepted Matthew. I mean, they're rare people. They really, Judy and but of course it was a horrible, when you read the book, you cry because it was horrible what happened to their son. I mean,
yeah, it's one of those cases that stands out in the whole annals of hate crimes. It was one that showcased it. And, of course, hate crimes go back a long, long way. I mean, we have civil rights in this country with what the African-American people have gone through. And then we have stories of all these genocides and, of course, Hitler's Germany and the Jewish dilemma with that. I mean... the human condition is filled with all this violence, and
right.
I think it's our responsibility to show, I don't know, to walk the walk, you know, not be caught up in that kind of negativity.
Absolutely. No, you're right. Actually, as a result of Matthew Shepard, I think it was Obama signed into law a hate crimes bill against gays and lesbians. Is anybody?
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, Obama signed that into law, and Matthew and Judy Shepard had a lot to do with it. His mother.
Yeah, well, they should be using that law for try to. I don't know. I don't believe in punishment. I don't believe in punitive types of punishment. I believe that people need to learn and take responsibility for their actions. I don't believe in capital punishment, you know, and because it certainly hasn't proven to stop these kinds of crimes, and capital punishment hasn't stopped murder. So
no, it hasn't.
It doesn't really serve a purpose. So.
No, well, the kids that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The kids that killed Matthew Shepard, they're just spending their life in jail. No, hanging or gas chamber or whatever. But the kids that outed Tyler Clemente, we still don't know what's going to happen to them. I mean, they may go scot-free, but what I think, Kate, is no matter what happens to them, they ruin their lives. I mean, by doing this little prank, I mean, how can they ever forget what they caused, particularly the roommates? You know what I mean?
I would think that if people like that are not held up to the responsibility of their actions, that they're going to do something much worse down the road. If you know, it's like you have to hold people accountable, and for the sake of society. I mean, the fact that these people did what they did to this child, and they are getting away with it, is not really doing them any favors. It certainly isn't doing society any favors, and I don't really mean that they need to be severely punished and tortured like we do in our... Here's another problem in our society is the American judicial system. We have the most medieval way of treating people. And the fact that our former president, may I just say, President Bush comes out and he says that he okayed waterboarding,
and nobody
is completely freaked out by that.
It's
completely messed up. But anyway, it's no wonder that people are doing the things that they're doing when you have some stupid idiot president get up and say something like that. And he should be banned from traveling in Europe. And if he actually goes to Europe, I hope they arrest the motherfucker, because that's all I have to say about it.
Bush
and Cheney. They're criminals.
on a personal note, I don't know if we go way back. On a personal, can I say this, Kate? Your mother would be very proud of you.
I just think that when you have world leaders who actually are a proponent of torture.
I know. But let me just
I thought that when I heard that on that interview, I thought, oh my gosh, why did he say that?
It's going to come back to haunt him.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyway, back to those kids that did it with Tyler. Just a little known fact. Both of them have dropped out of Rutgers. I don't know where they are now, but they both dropped out of school. And they were not stupid kids themselves. They were smart kids. But now, who knows where the hell they'll go. But they dropped out of Rutgers.
Yes. They were probably tossed out. Expelled.
Well, yeah, I think they were. And when I find that letter from the president of Rutgers, I'll mail it to you.
I would love to see it.
Yeah, because, I mean, I didn't speak to him directly. I spoke to his secretary, but she said he was deluged with calls after it happened. And she said, I'll let him know. And then he wrote me this. I mean, I have to find that letter because I have to frame it.
Yeah.
I mean, getting a letter from the president of Rutgers University.
You really must frame it.
Oh, yes. It's special. So, anyway... Where are we?
I think that really what we're describing here is taking the high road and not denying the things that are happening. I don't mean that when I say that We need to, you know, be, as somebody just said, Steve, my friend Steve in the chat room says, be the light you want to see. I absolutely agree with that, but I don't think we can, there's a delicate balance that has to take place between being the light and then sort of denying the darkness, because you need to fully embrace all of it and to become a person who is honest. There's nothing. Over the weekend, I came to the realization that denial is nothing more than just an outright lie.
Right.
And let's call it what it is. It's not denial. It's absolute dishonesty. And so I think that we need to be honest above and beyond everything else. Honest. What brutal honesty, not to the point of hurting anybody else, but brutal honesty with what you are and what I am. And we have to be honest with ourselves.
No, but I agree with you. But a lot of people are in fear of that. They'd rather stay in denial than accept or look at the dark side. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Denial is more than a river in Egypt, as they say.
And there's something about being so positive that it seems like there's a delicate balance there, too, because sometimes people who are so positive and refuse to let in the negative seem like they've had a frontal lobotomy. And, of course, as we all know, the frontal lobotomy was used as a treatment for major depression.
I know it was. As we all know, look at what's wrong with the cuckoo's nest.
Exactly.
I mean, I think lobotomies in this country were ruled out, I've read somewhere, in 1948 they were still doing lobotomies. I mean, that seems like a long time ago, but it's not. 1948, lobotomies were still being done. And I think it was only about 15 years ago that homosexuality was not considered a major illness anymore. In the DSM-3, which is the Bible of psychiatrists and insurance companies, homosexuality was considered a major disorder until maybe 10, 15 years ago. Could you imagine? It was considered a disorder. Axis 1 disorder. I won't go into all the axes, but that's a major step. So that's a step forward, that homosexuality has been ruled out as an illness. Can you imagine?
That's crazy.
Yes, that's the truth. I studied this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you have.
And again, only in America would they say homosexuality is an illness.
Only in America. It's true. I was thinking that, well, there's a lot to be said about, a lot to be gained, I would say, by studying American repressed attitudes towards not just sexuality, but about all kinds of things that have to do with a full expression of self.
Yes. I mean, it was only 1948 that Harry Truman integrated the armies and navies. Blacks were separated from whites until Harry Truman made a law that blacks and whites should be in the same military together. Again, can you imagine that?
Right.
You know,
that is was a great thing that he did. But somebody had to do it, and he was the one. That's great.
And now they want Obama to do the same thing about, you know, gays in the military. And I think it is going to happen, that they're going to allow the don't ask, don't tell thing is going to be abolished.
Yes, it has to be. I think we need to say a few words about the don't ask, don't tell. In all fairness to President Clinton, I think these politicians tend to want to do things incrementally. They don't want to do things all at once.
No,
and
they don't.
what has happened over the last few years, and that was a lot of time. I mean, wasn't that President Clinton's first thing that he did in office, and that was in the early 90s, was Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yes.
Am I correct?
Yes.
So
right.
That was a long time ago. I mean, that was like in the early 90s, and now we're in the, it's almost 2011. So what they've learned, from Don't Ask, Don't Tell is that nobody is being threatened in the locker room. You know, nobody is being raped by homosexuals.
No.
You know what I'm saying. It's like, for some reason, it took another 15, 16 years for people to realize that nothing, that the people who are fighting in the military for our country, which, you know, I don't believe there should be any wars and all this, this and that. But anyway, there are people who are sort of warrior types.
Yes.
And people are fighting side by side to defend the country, and therefore it doesn't really matter what their sexuality is, because they're all in a common goal of warriorism, and I think it's taken that amount of time to see that the gay in the military issue is a moot point, and everybody should embrace anybody who wants to serve their country, no matter who they are. I mean, if they are giving stellar performances and this and this and this, there's a lot of outing, quote, outing that's going on now with this gays in the military stuff. And there was a politician, and I don't even know if, I think he must have been a Democrat, he's an older man, recently got on TV, and they broadcasted him saying that this should not ever be something that is an issue again, and they should just abolish the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and whoever wants to serve their country, given, I suppose, there would be some stipulations there. I mean, if you're a criminal or something, it might be better not to, but...
let me refer to another article in the New York Times, December 1st, just recently. And its title, it was in the Wednesday, December 1st, New York Times, one of the lead articles, Pentagon sees little risk in allowing gay men and women to serve openly. Even Defense Secretary Robert M. Gates feels it's about time we turn that over. Don't ask, don't tell. So,
you're right. It's the major people, major figures, military leaders in the American military are saying things like that. It's just a matter of time. It could be very, very soon that we're going to see an end to that. And that is a relief, because when things like that happen in the military, things then change in the society. And I really believe they do. For instance, Truman integrating the military was one step in integrating the country.
That's a very good point.
That is going to be a big step ahead for getting rid of the sick homophobia that we have in our society.
Yes, I agree. But then there'll always be that backlash of people that say, "Oh, we can't have that. You know, gays are going to go rape every straight man and woman that you could think of, and." Gays are going to rape, are going to have sex with other straight men, and blah, blah, blah. The religious people get into it again. You can't have gays in the military. It's unchristian and blah, blah, blah. I mean...
Yeah, I think they will have lost their voice, though, in this one.
Well, I think you're right.
Yeah, I think the time has come, and it couldn't come soon enough, that's for sure.
That's right. And we'll still be fighting gays with straights, but that's a whole other story about fighting.
Yeah, I know. I believe in peace on earth. And here we are at the wonderful season of the solstice, let's say. And there is a tremendous amount of the white dove representing peace and carrying a piece of laurel in the mouth. I know that you're Jewish, and this whole Christian holiday must drive you crazy. But
well, I still love the mistletoe and kissing under the mistletoe. And
kissing under the mistletoe, right, right.
I like some of the songs. And no, actually, I'm universalist right now. I'm more universalist.
Oh, that's right. But you cannot, but Joel, you cannot deny your upbringing.
Yes, I know. My relatives remind me of that all the time.
What do they think about you now becoming a Unitarian?
Oh, they think it's great. They think my relatives are pretty enlightened for the most part. They think
yes.
As long as I don't give up Hanukkah and matzo ball soup and things like that, that, you know, I didn't realize until I talked to your brother the other night that your whole family grew up Unitarian.
Oh, yes, I was raised in that church.
Yeah, I had forgotten that completely. And isn't it funny, now I'm part of that church.
I think that's great. I think it is.
And I'm writing a play that I want you and everybody to come see about my experience with Tim in San Francisco.
I know, I want to see it. And maybe, did you say Delaney and Jala will be in it?
This is a new version of the play. It was done as a stage reading in San Francisco in the 90s, but now I've completely rewritten it. It's more a focus on just the relationship between Tim and myself, and maybe Jala and Delaney are characters in the play, but I don't know if they'll be actors in the play unless they want to fly up here.
Well, I bet you Tim has a lot to do with the writing of that play.
Oh, he's my inspiration. And as I'm writing it, I'm laughing hysterically, remembering all the stuff we did. Like, there's one scene in the play where I practically burned down the bathroom.
Oh, my gosh. Did Tim, were you with him when he died?
Oh, well, not the moment he died, but I was there a half hour later. That's in the play, too. Probably the worst experience of my life to watch him deteriorate like that, because he was a healthy man, very bright.
I know. I met him.
Oh, I know you did. You know who he was.
I like him.
Oh, everybody liked him. He was a real sweetheart. Indeed.
He really was a wonderful man.
He was. He really was. And now he's in heaven, I think, looking down and laughing at us fools.
I know. Here we are on this radio show, and he's even watching that, I think.
I think so, too.
I think he's very happy that you have come so far. You really were in a dark place. And you were there for a long time, and he is very happy that you have come into a joyful situation in your life.
Oh, I think so. I think he would be very happy because he always wanted me to be happy, and you know, we loved each other. He was my soulmate, if you want to use that expression.
I do. I think it's a wonderful description of what can happen between two people.
Yeah, well, we had our problems, of course, like anybody else, but when he walked into that restaurant, the first scene of the play, it's like I saw a white light.
Yes. And you did.
I guess I did. I mean, in real life, it was probably the cars, you know, Union Street, it was the cars reflecting off the window, but I saw a light coming from his.
Oh, Joel, have you seen the movie The Hereafter?
Oh, with the Clint Eastwood movie?
Yeah.
I loved it.
It's one of my favorite scenes. Now, that little boy was killed because of bullying.
Because of what?
He was totally bullied. And anyway, that scene between Matt Damon and the child has to be one of the most moving movie scenes I've ever seen.
I agree.
I have never seen anything like that.
Remind me what happens again between.
Well, I just thought, you know, the interesting part about it was they all converge in London.
London.
And
right.
The little boy lived in London. The woman who died and came back in that tsunami had, you know, she just completely, after near death, after death experience, completely catapulted her off the success. You know, she was really into the successful of upward track, career track, and suddenly she couldn't handle that anymore. And she wrote this book about her experience of dying and coming back.
Right.
And she it was a book that was published, and she was at a book signing thing. So she was in London, and the kid is looking for some sort of verification for the fact that his identical twin brother is still alive somewhere, you know, that there is a hereafter, that he wasn't just, that somebody didn't just pull the plug. So he's there, and Matt Damon is there because his brother tried to force him back into being a psychic. And did you tell me this? That the woman who that beautiful woman that Matt Damon played opposite, they were in the cooking class together, is actually Ron Howard's daughter.
Oh, I didn't know that. No, I didn't.
Beautiful, beautiful girl, isn't she? And that scene between the two of them, when he ascertains that she had been sexually abused, absolutely unbelievable scene, I thought. You remember that?
No, the Ron Howard's daughter was sexually abused in the movie.
But no, it wasn't like, it was like the role that she played. She insisted that Matt Damon do a session on her.
Oh, yes.
And, then he completely, you know, he just didn't want to do it. And,
I remember.
It's a great movie. So they all meet in London. In London, and the little kid tracks him down and stands outside of his hotel for hours and he keeps looking out the window and he sees the kid, and then he brings him up, and they do that most unremarkable theatrical scene of all time. Oh my God.
What happens again?
Well, he takes him, he says, your brother is here, and he has a great laugh, and boy, does he talk a lot. And the kid had his hat blown off, and he couldn't get on the train, remember? And the train blew up and all this. And the brother says, and this is it, I am not going to, you know, save, I'm not going to be intervening in your life anymore. You have to stand on your own two feet.
Oh, yes.
And then the kid wept and wept and wept, and he said, please don't leave me, please don't leave me. And Matt Damon said suddenly, but he's not leaving you. The two of you are one. He is now in you. And, oh, my God, it was just the most beautiful thing. I was just sobbing. I could not hold myself. I could not hold myself together on that one.
I was too. Now I remember, actually, you're talking about it. And that little kid, the actor, was brilliant. The first time he ever acted, I think.
He was a beautiful kid.
So
that's my all-time favorite movie. I just loved it. I loved the message, and it was well done. It was more well orchestrated. Matt Damon was, as usual, he's a great actor.
He is a great actor.
And Clint Eastwood's beautiful piano playing throughout the whole movie. Oh, my gosh, it was just a work of art.
I know.
I loved it.
I loved that movie. I did too. I thought about Tim, and I thought about all the people I've lost, and synchronicity and all that.
It's amazing. Life is just a spiritual adventure.
And I would have thought Clint Eastwood would be doing something like that.
I know. He's actually, you know, everybody thought he was just this conservative guy, but he's really quite creative. He's a genius.
He's a
wonderful. Yeah, he's a, just in every way, he's an amazing guy.
Oh, yeah, he is. We could talk about, did you ever see Changeling with Angelina Jolie? She won the Academy Award. It's a true story about a young boy that's kidnapped, and it's her son, and they put another son in his place, and she goes to the movie. She's another great actress. She goes to the movie.
Yes, she is.
That is not my son. That is not my son. And it takes place in Los Angeles in the 20s. Eastwood directed that, and it's another brilliant movie. She won the award for Best Actress. It's called Changeling.
Yeah, I had. I didn't see that one. I think I'll make an attempt to see it. But yeah, oh, there's so many exciting things that we can do and watch and become enlightened by. And well, of course, we've come to the end of the hour. I actually extended this to 90 minutes, but we don't really have to do the whole thing. But we'll have you back because, well, I think I'll be doing the show solo in the new year.
Okay.
If Steve is listening, my friend Steve, he now has heard the news. And Joan just has other things that she wants to do, and she and I will continue to do the Giant Squid Open Mic radio show that we do every we do it before this show, and Tuesday's become our Blog Talk Radio manifesto.
Well, that's great, Kate. I think you're doing a great thing. And is there any way that I could not only get a transcript of this, but also find out what how people give you feedback? I'd like to know what kind of feedback you get.
Let you know. I think the best thing to do would be, well, one thing I do is after the show is over, then everything is archived. And you say your friend Eric has some family who might be interested in the show. I'm sure they have internet access.
Oh, yes, they do. Although the show,
well, if you want to tell me, maybe not tell me now, but because I don't think they'd appreciate their email address being on the radio.
No.
But if you would give me their email address, I will send them links to these both of these shows.
Oh, that would be nice. I mean, although, yes, I think particularly his brother, who's a lawyer, or not a lawyer, a computer person, I think he'd be very interested in that.
Yeah. Or maybe just give it to me on the phone soon. Well, I'll call you and you can give me that information on the phone, and then I can email that stuff to him.
Okay, that would be good.
Yes.
So
my love to you, and I will talk with you very soon, and I'm going to be watching some of these movies and reading some of this information. And I also want to read that Unquiet Mind.
Oh, brilliant book. Brilliant. Kay
and
Redfield.
Who's the author of that book?
Kay Redfield Jameson, a brilliant psychiatrist who comes out about her manic depression. Brilliant.
Yeah, I want to read that. I want to read that one.
Oh, okay, you got your assignment cut out. But no quiz. I don't give quizzes anymore.
Oh, good for you. I don't take them either. Okay, so I'm going to be playing the music for Mother and Child, and I will speak with you very soon.
Okay, sounds good, Kate.
Love to you.
Love to you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.